Hello, everyone. I'm Mark Hashik, and this is Roadkill Radio, and you're listening to The Mark Hashik Show. Well, it's election time again in Vancouver. We have a civic election on November 19th, where Mayor Gregor Robertson and his Vision Vancouver cabal will do their best to hold on to their seats at City Council. Predictably, crime is an issue, and that always leads back to the downtown east side, a perennial election issue here in Vancouver. We have a large open drug market, prostitution, violence, everything that goes along with that. My guest tonight is intimately aware of the downtown east side and Vancouver policing. He spent 26 years on the Vancouver Police Department, much of it as a street-level cop and a beat officer in the downtown east side. He co-founded the Odd Squad, a group of police officers that make anti-drug films and do drug education, and he's a frequent critic of public policy. Al Arsenault is our guest. Al, thanks for coming on the Mark Hashik Show.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Before we get into talking about the downtown east side, policing, that type of thing, I wanted to get your opinion on the Supreme Court Insight ruling, because I know that you follow this issue closely. Last month, the Supreme Court blessed Insight. It will stay open in perpetuity now, Insight being our supervised injection site, where addicts buy heroin, cocaine, other drugs on the street, enter the site, and under the watchful eye of nurses and other health officials, quote unquote, they shoot up. Al, what was your take on the Supreme Court decision, and do you think this is a good thing for Vancouver?
Well, that Supreme Court decision was based on the Center of Excellence. They've got a number of researchers there from UBC, Van Wood et al., they've turned out a couple of dozen reports regarding the drug injection site, citing how great it is and all the great things that it does. Recently, Gary Christensen from the Drug Free Australia looked at the reports,
right,
and found them to be less than truthful or accurate. And they made a certain number of claims, like that the drug overdoses went down 35%. During a number of years there within a, 500-meter radius of a drug injection site. Okay. When it actually, and then they claimed the rest of the city, it only went down 9%. But, they basically, misused the statistics that were out there, the data that was out there, and they couldn't make those claims.
One of the
overdose deaths went up.
Right.
And they claimed it went down. But they included a 2001 data, which was not part of the SIS opened up in 2003, and they used a very high time when the heroin availability was large. And they, of course, then when they go to the end point, it looks like, oh, geez, the overdose deaths went down, but actually they went up every year.
And everybody should go online and check that out.
Oh, yeah, the Network of Canada, which I'm a board member, dpnoc.ca, the report's listed there, and they can go online and look at this report themselves. In fact, there's a complaint into the UBC, which these researchers have been working from, complaining about, the lack of veracity in these reports. They've claimed that they didn't know any of confounding effects of policing in the area, yet a couple of the researchers were co-authors of a report damning the police or showing that the police had actually displaced people out of there and the downtown east side and this and that. So on one hand they're saying that, yeah, that there's the police are influencing the data, and the other hand they say, oh, we don't know of anything that would confound this the effects. And 41% of the drug overdoses were not even injection related, and they don't take that into account. So you don't take into account the extra policing down there,
right,
the fact that a lot of the 41% of the drug overdoses are not even injection related, and things like, if you don't take those kinds of considerations in there, what kind of conclusion,
science,
what kind of a report had they written?
Well, I've been a long time critic of the study regime by the folks at Insight, and I'll repeat it again. The media has done a terrible job on illuminating people and informing them that the folks who lobbied for Insight are the folks who are compiling these studies, and they're supposed to be free of any bias, which just doesn't
happen. Really, I mean, if they're a tobacco company saying, oh, we're going to do our own research saying that you know, smoking's healthy for you, there'd be an outcry. Well, why are these guys allowed to churn out report after report exemplifying the what a wonderful thing the drug injection site does when it's ridiculous? And anybody with a sore eye in their rear end can go down there and realize that there's that's a very, very ill community.
Okay,
when I started walking the beat down there in the mid-'80s, you didn't see people walking around with you know, legs and arms missing. You do now.
Okay.
So what about a report on that? How about a report on sort of comparing Dilaudid with hydromorphone versus heroin, you know, to get people, keep them, get them healthy. I don't know how you can do that with using those drugs, but get them healthy and do less crime.
Okay.
You know, why don't I say, well, let's compare, giving them these drugs versus good treatment.
Right.
How about that for a study? Wow, wouldn't that be groundbreaking?
Don't hold your breath on that one, Al.
Yeah.
Let's go to the neighborhood and let's talk policing.
Okay.
How would you describe the type of policing that takes place currently in the downtown East Side under Police Chief Jim Chu and ostensibly the Vancouver Mayor Gregor Robertson because he's chair of the police board?
I mean, I'm retired for 5.5 years, though, but I was, as you know, a longtime beat officer down there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a very, very difficult neighborhood to police because of the numbers of social issues you have to deal with: mental illness and crime and poverty and drug addiction and goes on and on. Having said that, I think the officers that are walking the beat down there overall do a pretty good job. They're just basically keeping a lid on things.
And, are there enough cops in the neighborhood?
You know, I go down there regularly and visit my old partner, Sergeant Toby Hinton, and Mark Steinkamp, another odd squad guy, and Sergeant Dave Kolb. There's three odd squad guys. They're actually sergeants down there now.
Yeah.
With a band of men and women working under them. But so, and they actually go from call to call to call. It's all, a lot of it's on view, not, you know, waiting for a radio call to come in. They walk down there and they see so much. So many things happening that it's very, very difficult place to work. It's hard on persons, you know, the officers' emotions, and you know, it's just very stressful because they're working like dogs down there.
Well, I'm not an expert like you, but I'm in the neighborhood often. I was just down there 2 days ago, walking around Chinatown into the downtown East Side, and no word of a lie, I was there for about 2 hours, and you know, this could have been an unusual situation, but I didn't see a uniformed police officer.
And because they're in there writing up on the other crime.
Well, this is my point, Al. Don't you think that we need more police, presence?
Obviously, we do. I mean, you know, New York cleaned up their problems.
I was going to mention New York. I'm glad you mentioned it.
You know, Giuliani their crime rate went really, really low. And I don't know, you say you're not an expert, Mark, but if you really looked carefully, did you see anybody in there in need of treatment of any kind? Mental illness, drugs? I know you'd probably have to really, really look carefully. But
well,
if
Al,
I went down there and pointed out, you'd see all these people.
No, Al, listen,
down there.
I am a big supporter of, I believe that our mental health system, our drug prevention and treatment system, if you will, is woefully underfunded.
Absolutely.
That's the root of the problem right there. But that doesn't mean that you can't enforce the law or at least crack down on the predatory people in the neighborhood. I'm gonna float one idea that I always float when we talk about these issues. How about we have this community court. How about a no-fly zone, a red zone, a no-go zone in the downtown East Side that if you're convicted of a crime, and you can figure out which crimes they are, but if you're convicted of a crime, you're not allowed back in that neighborhood. And if you are, then your suspended sentence, which they usually get, is enacted, or you violate your parole.
Oh, they have that already. They call no-goes.
But is there something specific to the Downtown East Side where anybody who's convicted of a drug crime, say...
Oh, yeah, but they get in there and say, oh, but my girlfriend lives there. Oh, I'm going to work there now. Or, you know, that's where my house is or whatever. So they're
not enforcing it is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, no-goes are
I think that should be
a lot of people down there, but they end up reversing them or, you know.
Okay, let's move on from that. I think that should be a standard practice, that
sure.
A part of any sentence involved in the Downtown East Side. What effect do groups, in your opinion, like the Pivot Legal Society and the BC Civil Liberties Association and other groups like this, what effect do they have on the type of policing that takes place in the Downtown East Side? Because it seems to me, at least with this current the current leadership at the Vancouver Police Department, led by Jim Chu, that they are very aware, should I say, of the sensibilities coming from, you know, say, the Pivot Legal Society, and they want to appease them in some way.
Well, I'm all for if there's impoverished, marginalized people being fairly represented.
So
I have
am
no
I.
problem with that, but. Groups like Pivot, in my mind, they go overboard to make the police the bad people, and they actually create, we're trying to build bridges, the police are trying to build bridges down there, and these other groups sometimes are trying to rip them down. And even if you do something really, really good, they'll still attack you for it, just because you're the police. Just like years ago when Rice Wine was a problem down there, we actually put a video together and showed it to the news, and somebody there had a Pivot, or they had a Rice Wine users group, and they were trying for 7 years to get this stuff regulated into liquor stores. Well, when we did, we only had one complaint. We showed the video, gave it to media, they showed it, and then within a few hours, the Attorney General was on the phone and was saying, okay, yeah, we accede to your recommendations, and then, good, the problem was virtually solved, and then we only had one complaint.
Right.
That was from the head of the Rice Wine Users Group. it was laughable. But to her credit, she did phone back later and said, no, actually, you know, between you and I, you did a good job. But, I mean, they get attacked by helping solve their problem, which means that no user group exists anymore,
it's absolutely crazy. I'll never forget a conversation I had with David Eby, who is now the head of the BCCLA. And I said, David, we have these predatory crack dealers. This is the story I was writing. We had these guys that were shaving women's heads and whatnot who were in debt to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, David, what should we do with that guy pushing crack to young people, to kids, to whomever on the corner of wherever, to pick a corner in the Downtown East Side? What should we do about that guy? And he could not say, he refused to say that he should be arrested.
I mean, this is the
mentality that that we're dealing with.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's him and these civil libertarians. Who voted for these guys? Because a lot of times when they're espousing, we don't want this video surveillance down there, we don't want this, we don't want that, and we don't want... who voted for them? Mostly what they say is what I'm against. So I never voted for them. How do these guys get in that position?
That comes back to my original question, though. They seem to have a lot of influence in the neighborhood, and I'm wondering how much influence they have on the police.
Yeah, well, where do these people come from? Like, I don't know.
Why do the cops listen to them?
I don't know. Because they just, you know, one of the part of the difficulties of being a police officer is not just all the human stuff, the tragedy and despair they see down there, but they're also walking through a political minefield. All these people, everything they do, they're being scrutinized and second guessed and all this kind of stuff. And it makes the working conditions down there difficult for the police. And it certainly doesn't improve the relations between the police and the people that they really do serve and serve well, I think.
Speaking of a political minefield, the missing women inquiry, which is taking place right now, cops are being blamed. I think the VPD, the way they're conducting themselves at the inquiry, is not helpful, to say the least. You were a cop in Vancouver during Picton's reign of terror. What do you remember from that time?
Well, I remember there's a palpable fear with the women down there, and And actually, we started filming some of the women down there with the idea of, this is early in the Odd Squad days, with the hope of doing a documentary. And then we realized that I'm telling you, especially on the missing women, I thought, well, this is more than what we can handle.
Okay.
We're going to get chastised one way or other, no matter how it turns out. So we abandoned that idea. But I remember at the time talking to the women, I said, aren't you worried about being next and blah, blah, blah. And then also, you know, at the time, I thought, man, how come I didn't see that, you
right.
know? But then, you know, years before, there's a guy named James Allender, and he was convicted of murdering a prostitute. And it turns out he was a hockey coach. I think he had two kids, lived in near Nanaimo Street, somewhere down there.
Pillar of the community.
A one-off.
Yeah.
He did one woman. He cut her breasts off and her pubic hair, and it was a CPR policeman or CNR policeman that happened to see this truck go away, and then and there's suspicious, you know, there's a rug there, and he found a body, and then he happened to write down the license plate number. That's the only reason why he was caught. I thought it was one guy. And then if you look at the bad date list, and these poor women down there are getting beat up and, you know, all the time, and I thought, well, here's one family man, and these girls are, obviously there's a high number of women going missing because they're in a dangerous occupation, and there's, you know, literally hundreds of predators out there, and I thought there's hundreds of people killing these girls.
Right.
Well, that was from my when I was in the strike force, I did some surveillance on James Allender, and we ended up arresting him for that murder. And I thought, well, geez, he's just one of hundreds of predators. And it was Kim Rosmo that basically said, hey, you got a serial killer on board here. And he was a former beat man as well, and partnered to Sergeant Toby Hinton. And he basically was summarily dismissed, and, you know, he'll be appearing at that inquiry. I got an email from him last night, and, you know, so he's gonna have lots to say, I'm sure.
Okay, for that inquiry, I wish the VPD would worry less about bringing their lawyers into the inquiry and just worry about the facts, but we're going to get away from that. To wrap up, we're getting back to the election. You were part of the VPD's crowd control unit, correct?
That's right. There in 94, and actually I was in the Sea Festival riot. I don't know if many people remember that.
Right.
It was 19.
You caused that riot, didn't you? I heard you caused that one.
Yeah.
Now, you were a part of the VPD's crowd control unit back then. The Stanley Cup riot happened in June, and it's bound to be discussed this election season. As an expert, what should have been done before Game 7? What should Chief Chu and the cops have done?
I don't call myself an expert in crowd control, but I was down there. I was down there filming this last one, last fiasco. So I've seen three unfold, and what I saw, there's a lot of restraint on the part of the VPD.
Well, isn't that the problem, though?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a certain there's a time for talk and a time for action.
Whatever happened to Billy Clubs?
When you're a loudspeaker, go, this is unlawful assembly. You got 10 minutes or 20 minutes to leave the area, and they go blah 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 for like 2 hours. You might as well have a toothless dog barking. And none of these people who didn't leave, whose faces are identified, are they being charged for being in an unlawful assembly? No. So what's the recourse next time when they say, when the loudspeaker comes out and say you've got 20 minutes to leave the area, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, you guys are now charged, and then anybody they grab or identify later on video, there's no recourse. You know, they'll say, oh, they said that last time, nobody got charged. So, I mean, apart from the people that did the damage, they should be charging all those people down there who had no lawful reason to be there with being part of an unlawful assembly.
Okay, but that's after the fact. I was at the epicenter of the riot as an observer. And a disappointed Canucks fan.
Probably walked right by you.
Yeah, probably.
But man, did you have a mask on?
No.
Another thing, if somebody's in a mask in a public place like that, they should be arrestable. I know that if you wear a mask in the commission of an offense like robbery, yeah. Then it's...
See what David Eby has to say about that. But I was at the epicenter of that riot, and I firmly believe, again, I'm not an expert, that if the VPD had jumped on the instigators and handcuff them and put them into paddy wagons or whatever you want to call them these days, that would have been enough. And I don't think you need 2,000 cops down there. I think they had enough police. But
yeah,
I just thought the hands-off approach was ridiculous.
Crowd with a roving band of plainclothes guys, and it's very risky, you know, because the other guys could turn on, but just grab we used to have a, when I was in the crowd control unit, a snatch and grab squad, but just the line would open up, there'd be a bunch of people that you go run out, you know, 3-4 people, run out, grab somebody, haul them in behind the line, and then, you know, but you're right, if the instigators are left unchecked, they incite the crowd into do bigger and better things, and Vancouver should be ashamed of themselves, especially the people that were down there, giving their tacit approval just by hanging around when the police come down there with a loudspeaker and saying leave, and they don't.
Yeah.
Shame on them. Shame on us.
Okay. Next June, when the Canucks win the Stanley Cup, you and your snatch and grab team, you get a private company to fund you. You guys come down there, and you just grab anybody off the street. I don't care if they're wearing a BX shirt or not.
We call ourselves a removal squad, and then the civil libertarians saying, what do you mean by remove? Not off the face of the earth, just, you know, out of the area.
That would be great. Listen, Al, thanks for joining us here on Roadkill Radio. Appreciate it. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, pleasure talking to you.
Al Arsenault, former beat cop in the downtown East Side, security expert, and he knows his stuff. Thanks again, Al, and thank you for joining us here on the Mark Hasek Show. See you next time.